So we've heard about the higher layers of the Dark MS project, which is about, well, using SDRs to actually for the MS side instead of the network side for GPS and GSM. I'm talking about the lower level details, as in, well, hardware selection and the more less software-ish and more hardware-related parts. And of course, well, the project originally started 2 years ago at the end of Corona. So the first issue is obviously, where do you start? You need a SDR. Which one do you choose? Zoom. Oh, zoom in. Again, so small. More like this?
Thanks. Yeah.
So which SDR do you pick? Well, at the end of the day, usually the one that happens to be sitting on your desk. Because first of all, there aren't that many cheap and affordable SDRs, or, well, cheap is probably the wrong word to use in that context. Because, well, the B210 is kind of rather really expensive, like $2,000 right now. The Blade is slightly cheaper, but still expensive. And it has a significantly less flexible clocking, which is kind of important for GSM. The obvious advantage of the B210 is, well, I had it on my desk and I'm familiar with the transceiver that's actually on that thing. So that's kind of a good start to use something that you know how to use it. And of course, the same thing applies to the Blade RF 2.0, same transceiver, everything else slightly different, but not that different. There are cheaper SDRs, yes, but there's no point trying those if you have one of those devices. And, well, the problem with the SDR selection is the project is aimed at end users. And it's generally not that great if you approach someone and tell them, yeah, there's this MS site, you can just give it a try with your SDR for $2,000 and maybe a laptop. That's kind of a bad start, to be honest. So, yeah, it's still a problem, but the Blade is at least a little bit cheaper. And one of the advantages of the Blades, as far as the software side is concerned, it doesn't have UHD. UHD is great, don't get me wrong. It has tons of threads you have to put somewhere and so on. It's still great, but the Blade is slightly less complicated and you can actually be the USB loop with async calls and so on for getting the data delivered. As far as I know, UHD can't do that. I think there was a GSOC project some years ago, but I don't know if anything ever happened to that. So as far as the SDR selection is concerned, the original try was the B210, and then I just switched to the Blade because, well, it's slightly more convenient, at least for me, and it's cheaper. And of course, the software parts for building something like that, some parts were already available. Oops. Osmo2X, obviously, the network side for GSM and GPS has existed for quite some time, so there are some parts. Then is Piotr's GRGSM AirProp part for the Viterbi equalizer. And of course, by now, really ancient fork of Osmo2X for the MS side was basically mostly concerned about syncing with the network and so on, like correlation and everything like that. The problem is Osmo2X is really great on the network side, but the network side can it's kind of easy to run the network side. We have a fairly large frame advance, so that means even if there's quite a bit of latency jitter, it doesn't really matter, like three frames in advance. Now, for the MS side, it's slightly more tricky because there's the so-called uplink status flag for GPS, and you kind of have to respond fast. And the problem isn't that this is not possible to basically modify Osmo2X to make that work fast enough. The problem is, well, what if it turns out not to be fast enough? At some point, it's easier just to build your own thing instead of trying to, well, bend that into the MS side, even though it was not originally designed to do that. It features UDP and so on. You don't really want to do any networking between different parts of an application, at least not in this low latency case. That was my idea, and that's my opinion, and, well, resulting work actually works, so I guess I was not entirely wrong. And, of course, there's the matter of, well, where will that software actually run? And I'd like to point out that the software side, when you talk about devices, where will the software run? Yeah, you can obviously tell people to just use a laptop. Will it work? Probably, maybe. Sometimes I can actually run it in a VM once a day, often not. So it's not like you can't just use a random device. It's just not going to be particularly reliable. And in this case, well, it's a product, so telling the customer to just use hardware and then it will just not work and something like that doesn't really work like that. So what do you do? Well, you pick some sort of small and preferably affordable device, in which this case is actually the Pi 4. At least in the beginning it was the Pi 4, now it's the 5. And I'd like to point out the software support part, because at the end of the day, if you pick embedded devices, it's not really about the hardware. Of course, the hardware has to be fast enough to process the samples to do all the DSP. But yeah, at the end of the day, you need to be able to actually use the device, and that means the software side of things. And as far as the Pi is concerned, well, I just bought one at the time. Like, I bought it in the morning, had it delivered in the evening. I thought, well, that works really well. I'm just going to buy a second one. Well, I bought that one, and it actually got delivered 1 year later. So I just got lucky buying that one. But it was apparently the right choice, because it does work. However, what is not the right choice? Well, this, for example, is what happens if you just pick a random device. Now, I'm not trying to badmouth AIM logic in particular or something like here, but this is the kind of, this is what you need to understand and read if you just pick a random Chinese board or something like that. Because apparently some AIM logic CPUs had the issue that, well, they would just somehow crash if the CPU frequency was too low. Allegedly, the previous generation had the opposite issue. It would just crash in some way if the frequency was too high. And that is the reason why it's not that easy to just select embedded devices. Because, yeah, you need to understand that the G12B relates to this specific device and to have and so on. So that's the difficult part, selecting the device. Knowing all that and understanding it and actually finding it and looking for it. So not that easy to select a proper device. And, of course, getting back to the software topic. So what does it look like? Well, like this. Not overly exciting. Of course, the kernel needs a few parameters to basically stop scheduling two of those physical four cores. And what actually is happening on those two cores is basically the TX part has its own dedicated core to be able to modulate bursts in time. And of course, this is one of the other threads. And this is basically where the whole project started. You are just syncing and ensuring that you can sync in time and keep the time. As in, you need to know what the SCH says, and then you can basically combine the knowledge of the SCH and the GSM frame number with the actual sample number that you're seeing, and that's how the timekeeping part works. And of course, there's a queue between all of that and so on, and that's like a single thread pool for some gain and initial sync and so on, and that's basically the not so important thread that does the upper level stuff, and including the DMARC basically. It asks the scheduler, is this template being used? The answer is yes, it demods it. If it doesn't, it just discards the burst. But all bursts basically get delivered to the upper layer because, well, that's the easiest way to just ensure that the timing kind of is similar and you don't have large gaps or pauses or whatever, which makes it significantly more easy to basically analyze that system because, as usual, anything that involves real-time processing, just profiling it is fairly difficult. Yeah, there's F-trace, you can use F-trace. But, well, looking at 1 million lines of text is not that useful. Look at the scheduling and so on. You can use Clang X-ray and so on and so on and so on. But profiling it while it's running is fairly difficult. At least on the Pi, it's slightly easier on the 5 because the Pi 5 is significantly faster than the 4. But at least on the 4, it's fairly difficult. So in general, the setup is not really exciting, as you can probably imagine. That's where the DMOD magic happens, and the modulation is basically straight from lifted from Osmo TX. And well, that's just, well, it's just processing the samples and of course interacting with the plate F and so on. And the upper layers are basically what was people talked about yesterday. So in general, lessons learned, just give that a try, then build everything else and it will just work, I guess. At least in this case, I probably got lucky. So there are other options of doing this. For example, by manually driving XHCI. You can manually drive the XHCI controller. You do not have to run Linux on the core that does the processing and so on. You could just drive USB yourself. The problem is that's usually a really bad idea due to something like this. This is basically, you know, this is just a random commit I picked from the Pi people. Basically, they upstreamed the patch to fix the XHCI controller, and then that got reverted upstream, and then it basically they reverted the revert because, well, it was broken again. You can't really drive XHCI controllers without, well, basically having manufacturer support like Synopsys or whatever. Yeah, you can look at the kernel code and then basically guess that the kernel code might be right and it might be working, but you might look at it at the wrong point in time, and then something like this will bite you. So it's possible, not a good idea, at least from my point of view. I gave it a short snap, and yeah, but it's basically the old USB issue. That USB is always in a, let's say, perpetual state of brokenness in some way. So there's that. And of course, there are other ways to do it. I need to zoom in again. The LibOsmo blob approach, because at the end of the day, analyzing the whole system, all those threads and so on, is kind of difficult, but we don't necessarily need threads. We don't even need user space software. You can just put everything into the kernel by literally just linking liblaterf with a few fixes to Moodle, which is the libc, and you can put all of that into the kernel and then just use that. And even using the FPU and doing the DSP stuff within the kernel is not, well, it might be rare, but it's possible. It's not like the FPU, using the FPU within the kernel is overly new or exciting. As far as I know, it started being more common due to the ARM crypto extensions, which actually imply Neon, so basically FPU support, so that needs restoring the state and so on. And it was more difficult years ago, but nowadays it's not, because it's all the context gets restored all the time. They used to do lazy restoration of the context, and it was far more difficult. Obvious problem with that approach is, can you make it work? Yes. Can you maintain it? Well, most libraries, including the libc and liblaterf, were not designed to be modified to be loaded as a kernel module. So you can do a one-off build, you can look at the timing, but you can't really tell the customer to just use that, because if something breaks, well, how do you fix the parts that you had to modify? That's basically impossible to maintain. So it's one of the approaches you can choose, but you have to be careful doing that. And of course, nowadays, during the past, or rather going back almost 2 years, there are other options for the SDR side that might be less expensive. In particular, the Pluto SDR now has a contribution from Software Radio Systems for timestamping support, and from another guy from the UK who basically did the same thing, just slightly different way. So it's actually nowadays TDMA capable, because that's one of the issues when you do TDMA. You can't just use a streaming SDR without timestamping support, because, well, how is that supposed to work? And of course, I had my own stab at making the Pluto SDR slightly better, and actually dating back 6 years or something like that, or even more than that, to basically remove the IIO parts and so on and get a slightly lower latency and stuff like that. But as far as I recall, ADI actually added part of the TDMA support sometimes during last December. So I guess ADI or someone appears to be working on Pluto and TDMA support even on the ADI side. So that's obviously one of the interesting SDR choices that would be interesting right now, but the project is pretty much done right now, and well, we can't spend infinite amounts of time on that. And of course, last but not least, why not brand? Well, my idea originally was to use two transceivers from I think it was actually Atmel, that's why it starts with AT. And those aren't that uncommon and unknown. They're actually being used by the Caribou Light. My personal opinion is that the Caribou Light is nice, but it would be nicer with USB, because I could just plug it into a random device, not just into a Pi. So I basically took my own stab at a cheap SDR that's kind of supposed to be a TX-capable, TDMA-capable, RTL is there, something like that, with a fairly low price point, which is the primary goal. The first prototype exists. It can kind of do GSM, but that's just the preliminary version that only exists to evaluate the actual hardware and the PCB. Because, well, just buying parts was fairly difficult last year and took about 3 months. So I don't know, I need to find the time to actually continue working on that, but it might probably be the cheapest way to actually run the MS side and maybe even the network side. And that pretty much concludes my few words about the lower layers. Any questions? No questions. Question?
It's more like a comment, since I, of course, have some more background knowledge about this project. in a sense that maybe you could spend another minute or so explaining more about the difficulties you had with the latency and with all the scheduling problems and tying tasks to CPU cores and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it kind of starts with the fact that you need to tell the kernel to not use CPU cores, certain ones that you want to use. And of course, there's the matter of interrupts that might still end up on those IRQs because there's IRQ balance that will, in theory, do the right thing. And then you notice that for some odd reason, the Ethernet interrupt will still end up on a core that should be empty. So I don't know what the explanation for that behavior is, but it's not really the expected behavior. And of course, you don't check all the time that there is no interrupt on the core that is supposed to be free. So those are the kinds of potholes you keep hitting all the damn time when doing it. And of course, the other issue with scheduling is, well, if you have a bunch of real-time tasks, debugging gets somewhat difficult due to the way that the priorities work, obviously. And you can't really observe the running system. Yeah, you can stop it, you can look at the state after stopping it, but you can't really observe it while it's running. And that makes it really difficult to basically get reliable timing information from anything. So at the end of the day, half of the original approach was that I knew a little bit more about the timing due to measurements I did on a Zinc years ago. So that was basically how I estimated that the pi would be sufficient, and it is. Of course, it still means you need to fix the CPU clock frequency to the maximum CPU frequency and so on, so you don't have weird latency spikes due to power saving and so on. But that applies to laptops as well. As I said before, you could probably just run the software on a laptop. It might work, it might not work, depending on CPU manufacturer, sleep states, and power saving measures. So that's basically what applies to the Pi as well. And yeah, as I've said before, the tooling for looking at scheduling and looking at those kinds of latencies is not that great. Because, well, as I've said, there's basically F-trace for scheduling and switching between threads and tasks. There's no great interface for that. Yeah, of course, there's perf as the interface for everything and so on, but getting the information you actually want to get and the information you need is really, really difficult. Any other questions or comments?
Stupid idea that just came up. I mean, if you have, I mean, I'm more familiar with real-time requirements on much smaller systems, so like microcontrollers where you do bare iron programming and things like that. And there is, of course, a lot of tools, not necessarily a lot of free software tools, but there are tools with all the ARM trace ports and all that kind of stuff. Do you know if something like this is realistically possible on I think the Raspi only has SWD exported, but not the parallel trace port, or does it have it, or would something like that make sense in the context of something like this?
Yeah, well, the embedded trace macrocells and whatever, the most of those ARM cores actually feature something like that, but actually using it, it's not that easy to set up. It depends on the specific CPU and what's in and what's not in there and so on. So there is no way to just use that in particular for looking at all cores and everything that's happening at the same time and then getting just the information you need instead of everything at once. I don't really want to know which core branched at which point into which directions all the time. I just want to know, is my task running? How much time does it take to demode one burst? Is it stalling? Are there differences in latency or not? And so basically, that's a mixed bag. You can either get everything or too little, but it's difficult to get the information you actually need.
Okay, then thanks for the talk. Do we have another question meanwhile? No? Okay, yeah, thanks.